It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, we'll just call it Buffering Moran Monday on the horn, shall we? I'm seeing it on both streams, and let me remind you that Frontier sucks. This has nothing to do with either one of the servers. This has to do with the monumental manifest suckitude of Frontier Communications. Corporate motto, Internet. What's an Internet? Yep. Jesus, this is terrible. Hold on here. Let me see if I can get a restart at least on the Head On live stream. Won't take but a second. And there we go. There we go. Maybe it'll settle down now. Devoutly to be wished, right? Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it really is. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Just another evening with more technical problems, thanks to terrible, god-awful, miserable, crummy... Did I mention terrible and god-awful? Internet infrastructure in the hills and hollers of Almost Level, West Bicol, Virginia, Stan. Yeah, why not? Wouldn't be any fun if this was easy, now would it? No, not in the least. It is, in fact, the fourth day of December 2017. We begin the first full week of December tonight, this evening, this afternoon, or sometime tomorrow morning, depending on where you are on this precious little blue-green marble, this time machine hurtling in its helical way through the universe. And it really is. It's Moran Monday. So we'll see what's coming our way. I've been stacking up Morans like cordwood since Saturday. Now, this being a program that doesn't have any advertisers or anything, thanks are in order. Well, before we get to the thanks, it's true. I wish it was, Steve. I wish it was. Steve from Georgia Stan says, hey, Gordo. Yeah. There's a half-baked Win 10 update in the air that's full of fleas. That could be your aggravation. No, it's not. No. Now, you know, it's easy to say that something, but no, my aggravation stems from the monumental suckitude of Frontier Communications, because they do. They suck it. They suck monumentally. Mm-hmm. Oh, and one of those, you know how I get through the suckitude of Frontier Communications? Well, let me tell you. I got up this morning. Got a little handful of them and got started just off on the right foot, yeah. With my daily dose, new from the hardworking peripatetic scientists at Horn Labs, magniloquent muscadine. That's right, magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs, a brand new nutritional supplement that'll put a little grape power in your step. Yes, magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs. It's a proprietary blend of muscadine goodness in capsule form that you can take every day to help you feel your absolute muscadine perky best. Magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs. It's got all the goodness of an entire muscadine vine right there in the palm of your hand. Magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs will help you through days like mine with these frustrating internet-based incompetency problems. Magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs is, it's vegan, it's gluten-free, non-GMO, cage-free, free-range, cruelty-free. Oh, yes, magniloquent muscadine meets all your ethical needs and your muscadine needs in one little handful of capsules. And if you buy a 3-month supply of magniloquent muscadine right now, we won't send you, if you buy it, it's only $101.93 for a 3-month supply of magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs. And by Jove, it'll get you where you want to go, how you want to get there. And absolutely, Labor Man asks, but will it keep your boner? It'll keep it. It'll keep it anywhere you want it to. In a box with a fox, in a train, in the rain. Uh-huh. Yep, magniloquent muscadine. Only from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, FOB, COD. USA, 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 USA. Magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs. You know, I've never cared much for muscadines, and, well, thanks to magniloquent muscadine, I can take my muscadines with me wherever I want to go and have all of that goodness right there in a little tiny bottle. Absolutely. And like I said, with that 3-month supply comes a little bundle of test strips so that you can find out what we at Horn Labs already know, that magniloquent muscadines are absolutely useless, totally meaningless, a giant freaking ripoff that only people of terribly weak mind would ever order from a radio program. I mean, really. You order your nutritional supplements off the radio programs, do you? Yeah, yeah. Do you go to a carnival barker for your medical needs? Do you? Uh-huh. Do you go to a sex worker to have your teeth cleaned? Cool. Then magniloquent muscadine is for you. Because, of course, this can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle to the weak-minded and the credulous. This probably explains why it is that, well, we're not moving so much product here at Horn Labs, because y'all know better. Mm-hmm. Steve in New York wants to know, but are they reality free? Absolutely. They're free of reality in addition to all the other things they're free of. They're even free of nutritional value. Magniloquent muscadine from Horn Labs. Brother Deacon wants to know, does magnificent muskrat? No, magnificent, magniloquent muscadine, Brother Deacon Asa. I know the clipping can't be that bad. Does magnificent muskrat from Horn Nutraceutical Labs help with beloved musicians not dropping dead? Well, we'll know if they ever take any, won't we? This is called science. This is called the gathering of empirical evidence. So if some ancient icon of rock and roll wants to start taking magniloquent muscadine, why, every day we will credit magniloquent muscadine with their continued longevity. In addition to having a sex worker clean your teeth, Earther reminds me, Earther says, I rent my sex toys from Craigslist. Is that a bad idea? There's a little jingle for Earther. Used sex toys, cheap. Now, the capitalist potential is absolutely there. Yes, indeed. No, Hoghead, magniloquent muscadine. It goes great with superlative scuppernongs. Yes. Draw on the bright lines tonight between the dots, aren't you, Steve? Steve from New York. Oh, so they're really super beats? No, they're magniloquent muscadines. Much tastier than any old beetroot. And plus, it won't turn your poop blood red and make you think you're dying. True story, that. You could put it that way. Keith wants to know, Bob, are you saying that front smear is levels unknown to man of horrible? I'd say that, except for the fact that the level of horrible that front smear is pretty clearly known. At least to me, because it seems like I've been experiencing it for a while. Yeah. Okay, so the college playoffs are all set. It looks like it's going to be Clemson and Alabama facing off in last year's national championship game in a rematch. And then in an effort to try to make it as easy as possible for Oklahoma to win the national championship, they set it up so Oklahoma will play Georgia. Roll damn tide, y'all. Roll tide. We're in and didn't even have to win the conference championship. You know, one of these days they'll figure out that we need an actual, no kidding, real live, honest to goodness, not joshing, actual playoff system. You know, 8-10 teams, something like that, 3-4 games. Oh well. But no, all kidding aside, thanks. It's time for thanks to go out because this is a big deal. It's a huge thing. What our subscribers do for us, because a whole lot of nights of the week during the broadcast month, we pull up short in the $200 that we try to raise every night. And if it was not for our subscribers, in addition to what does roll in during the program, this program wouldn't be on the air. It's that simple. So another reminder, if you'd like, go over to headonradionetwork.com and click on contribute and click that little box that says that you want this to be a recurring monthly donation. Put the number in and boom, there away you go. And you will be a subscriber, a sustaining subscriber to the horn. But for now, thanks go out to Liz. Thank you, Liz. And to our subscribers, Paul. Thank you, Paul, very kindly. Thanks to Catherine in California. Thank you to Jules in Taliban, Indiana. Thank you very kindly to Ann in Merry Oldie Engeland. Thank you, Ann and Jean. Thank you. Thanks also go out to Stephen in San Jose And to Renee in D.C., thank you, Renee. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks go out, of course, to our buddy Ron in the far frozen or permafrosted or somewhat slushy north. Thanks to John in Talibandiana, as well as to Janice up in Wisconsin. Sorry about the Badgers, Janice. I was rooting for him. And thanks, of course, to our buddy Anatole in the chat room, also a subscriber. Thanks very kindly to Greg, who, though not a subscriber, jumped in with big help over the weekend. Thank you, Greg. And thanks as well to Albert in North Carolina, to Elizabeth in New York, and to Darren in California. So all of that having been said, well, couldn't do it without you. We really, really couldn't do it without you. And so we find ourselves in the enviable position of not needing to fundraise this evening because it's taken care of by the subscribers. And that's awfully nice. So hopefully, we'll just keep the ball rolling. And if anybody does want to help out, that's fine. I'm not going to make another mention of it this evening because it makes for a much more enjoyable broadcast, at least from my end, and I trust it is from yours as well. nothing gets me. There are some of us over here on the progressive left who have not yet learned to have not quite yet gotten our snoots far enough into the air and actually still care about things like sports and football and baseball and hockey and basketball and things like that. Steve in New York says, you're wrong on the team you root for, but you're right on the need for a real playoff. Well, we can at least we agree on one thing, and that is the need for a playoff. I trust Steve is a little bit miffed because the team that didn't get in, Ohio State, is his beloved team, whereas the Crimson Tide did get in. And I expect them to acquit themselves quite nicely. They'll be healthy. They'll be nice and healthy by, say, a month from now. And that's part of the reason they faltered a little bit in the stretch. They were beat up, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Silent R. Lamar says, I've been taking stupid beats. Do they count, Bob? I don't know. I've never seen a beat count. But then again, I know several drummers who can count beats. That's just me. yes, Steve. Renting your toys from anywhere is a bad idea, right? Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so like I said, we've been playing Count the Morans for a while. And that means that we have what looks to be a pretty promising evening, so we should probably jump right into it.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
There it is, the dulcet tones of the horn calliope, calling you away from the Carnival Midway. Over here, just a few steps away, we can't afford the prime retail there on the Carnival Midway, so we take what's available. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and right here, right now, this very instant, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas you hear behind me now. Wait a minute.
You hear that? That's cybernetic canvas. My fingernails on cybernetic canvas. And we're waiting for you. Because it's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, we've got them all behind this thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas. We've got them for you. Birchers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpansies, maggots, Republicans, libertarians, one and all. For your amazement, your amusement, for your shock, for your wonder, for your horror, we meet all of those criteria behind the Moran Monday tent flap. They're waiting for you now. You know, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. No, sir, you can't. You can't. But they're here, and with this program, which comes to you for the average subscriber at $10 a month, comes in somewhere around 16 cents per hour of programming. And frankly, you can't even find anything at the Rippy Mart that's 16 cents, or even, well, 3 times 6 is 18, 3 times 4, carry the 1. 48, there's not even any 48 cent things there at the Rippy Mart. Not a blessed thing. So I think it's safe to say that this is a bargain. And your kind gift enables the Moran Mondays of the future, the prayer beaten Wednesdays of the future, the thorn in the side Thursdays, the Titanic Tuesdays, and the Fridays on the front porch. So jump right in. 400 folks, that's all we're looking for, is 400 folks, $10 a piece, and we will be forever set and able to go forward. But be that as it may, stop what you're doing. Come away from the shooting gallery, the dartboards and the balloons. Quit throwing those ping pong balls at those little goldfish bowls trying to win some hapless iguana, and get over here to the Moran Monday tent. A general gentle reminder, when you enter the Moran Monday tent, keep a close eye and a hand on wallets, purses, small children, pets. Yes, including the iguana that she won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, and even European messenger bags, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. I'm not kidding. There's a bunch of them this evening, and we're going to try to get to as many as we possibly can, as well as even your nominations, if you so choose, because it's Moran Monday on the horn. And so it is, we're done with the Calliope music for the evening. Okie dokie. Which Moran shall we start with? Oh, I forgot to welcome the chat room to the conversation. If you, by the way, would like to be part of it, just run over and click on chat room at headonradionetwork.com. Pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password, and you will be met upon your arrival by the likes of Anatole and Earther and Hoggahead and Kid Mark and Laborman and Silent R. Lamar and Mr. Bill and Ralphs and Squeaky and Steve from Georgistan and V.T. Blom, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. We're ready to roll. Yes, we are. Hey, We haven't had any Chinese Morans before. And this works in with some other Moranity, so I thought we might get started with this. They've done something amazing in China. Of course, we haven't done it here because, freedom. The Chinese produce more electric vehicles and use more electric vehicles than any nation on Earth. Not surprising. Big nation, lots of people. Desperate need for things that run on non-hydrocarbon resources. And they've just taken a giant step forward. Mm-hmm. The burning of coal and other hydrocarbon fuels has made many cities in China and a place where breathing, which is one of those things that human beings really need to do a lot of. You kind of have to breathe all the time to keep being a human being and everything. And the air in Chinese cities is atrocious. And the Chinese government is trying to do something about it, having a little success here. Among other of their deeply air-polluted cities are their major shipping ports. Ships leaving every day, many of them bound, cargo ships bound for the United States, so that our Walmarts and Targets and what have you can be stocked with the scads and scads and piles of meaningless, useless crap that nobody really needs, but somehow or another, the marketing people convince us that we do. Our clothing, our toys, our appliances, yeah, what have you. It all comes over on ships from China. Well, it was a big deal because the Chinese Guangzhou Shipyard International just launched its first electric ship. It has what is described as a capacity of 2,200 tons. It's not a transoceanic vessel. No. It's a short runner. It's good for about a 50-mile jaunt. But the big deal is that it has 1,000 lithium batteries, and after only a 2-hour charge, which is also the same amount of time it takes to load and unload the ship, after a 2-hour charge, the ship can travel 50 miles. Isn't that cool? I think it is. It sort of looks and sounds and feels a little bit like maybe the future. So how did the Chinese celebrate the world's first battery-operated electric cargo vessel? How? Oh, well, they naturally loaded it up with coal and sent it up the Pearl River in Guangdong Province. With about 2,300 tons of coal on board to take it up river to the coal-fired power plant there in Guangdong. Yeah, this is not a joke. They used it as a coal hauler. Genius. Just genius. And of course, the coal was sitting there on the docks because the coal came from somewhere else. Maybe it came from a blown-up mountain in over top of a poisoned community somewhere in Appalachia. And maybe, and this is our second nomination, maybe someday it'll come from some blasted hellscape in Utah. You know, our buddy Mike in Cascadia has kept me and by extension us up to speed on what's going on in Utah with both the Bears Ears National Monument and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, products of the Obama administration attempt to protect these natural lands, these unsullied wilderness areas, these magnificent landscapes. And today, Geezer Disgustus got aboard Air Force One and flew, again, there's that hydrocarbon energy, flew all the way to Utah to do something that he could have done right there in the Oval Office. But, well, climate change isn't real. Oil's going to last forever. There will always be jet fuel. Because, golly gee, we're going to drill the living bejesus out of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And, oh, my goodness gracious, that just gets Lisa Murkowski of Alaska so excited and tingly that she can sign off on $1 trillion deficit-expanding, budget-busting Senate tax reform scams. But he did. Describing what he was about to do as he got onto Air Force One is, it's big, it's going to be historic, believe me, historic. Mm-hmm. So what he has done, National Monuments, 111 years ago, it was called the Antiquities Act, and it was done as a part of the policy of Theodore Roosevelt to try to protect and preserve a little bit of the unsullied land that was left in the United States at that time. Virtually every part of the eastern United States to the Mississippi River had been to one degree or another deforested. And we were working our way across the rest of the country. So the public lands that the United States held in trust for the people of the United States in the West, with the Antiquities Act, efforts were made to protect and preserve some of those places. And they the Antiquities Act has been used through the years to establish boundaries for what are called national monuments. And that was the case with Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante. Well, now, over the course of those 111 years, the boundaries of national monuments have been changed 40 times. Of those 40 times that boundaries have been changed, 26 times it has been done to expand the boundaries of national monuments. 14 times they've been changed or modified downward. But never, ever, ever in the history of the United States has something been done such as what the Carotene Caligula did today. Now, the whole reason that Grand Staircase Escalante and Bear's Ears were in the tiny-handed Tiberius's sights . Well, it's something that Barack Obama did, and so therefore it cannot be allowed to stand. If Barack Obama had signed an executive order saying that, that kittens were sweet and furry, well, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini would have rescinded that executive order and declared that little kitty cats, little precious little baby kitty cats, were the spawn of Satan and must be destroyed. So anything that Barack Obama touched has got to be done away with. This is referred to, as I've noted before in Latin, as damnatio memoriae. Or in modern political speak, you might refer to it as the denigrification of America and the denigrification of presidential acts. The Trump administration is doing everything in its power to make sure that anything that was ever touched by an African American hand in the form of President Obama gets undone, so that we can have a nice white president and a nice white presidential history again. See how it works? And so the trip to Utah was, in fact, another effort in that ongoing process. And so what he did is he deprotected 85% of the Bears Ears National Monument. He gutted protections for 46% of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. In the case of Grand Staircase, that's the de-Clintonification of our national parks and national monuments. All told, that comes to something on the order of 3.25 million, with an M, acres of pristine American land that belongs to you and me. Why? So that it can be sold off to coal operators, coal barons, predators and thieves, who will then blow these national monuments to kingdom come and create toxic, health-destroying hellscapes where magnificent examples of natural beauty once were. Now, bear in mind that Bears Ears, which is in southeastern Utah, Bears Ears came into being because indigenous peoples in this country, tribal groups in the region, advocated tirelessly for the protection of the area. And then late in 2016, Barack Obama created the Bears Ears National Monument in 1.3 million acres of San Juan County, Utah. Which, of course, immediately drove the white wing, and I do mean white wing, into paroxysms of white, and I do mean white, hot rage. You might recall that the creation of Bears Ears is one of those pet issues that drove that goofy ass family, those weirdo Mormons. It drove them to attack and lay siege to and occupy a bird sanctuary, the Bundys, a bird sanctuary in Oregon. Because, that Kenyan muslin U-slurper had used his U-slurping wizard muslin powers to take away freedom land from America. Because them freedom lands needed to be timbered and drilled and blasted and mined. And so now, You know, if everything just remains static after this, what Barack Obama did would have been undone. Here's the question, though. Well, it's not a question. It is a question. This whole thing's going to court, and it's going to be led going to court by the Navajo Nation and four other tribes. Navajo Nation Vice President Jonathan Nez said, "This is a sad day for indigenous people and for America. However, we are resilient and refuse to allow President Trump's unlawful decision to discourage us. We will continue to fight in honor of our ancestral warriors who fought for our way of life, for our culture, and for our land, too." Because, see, there are things there at Bear's Ears that can never be replaced. I mean, you can start with the land itself. I don't care, as you well know, I don't care how often coal companies say, "Well, we're going to reclaim that land as good as new. It'll be better than God done made it. We're just helping God." And then they turn it into a toxic hellscape and try to get, you know, they pile up some back, you know, backfill some dirt on it and say, "See, it's all reclaimed now." So there's that. But secondarily, this is land that has been, that's had human beings on it for 10, 15,000 years. The ancestors of the Navajos that I just mentioned, as well as other tribes. And there inside Bear's Ears, there are rock carvings, thousands of years old. There are areas sacred to indigenous people that have been ruined by rednecks on four-wheelers. Natalie Landreth, an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund, said last week that the whole reason for creating Bear's Ears, quote, was due in large part to the looting and theft of Native American artifacts. The Center for Western Priorities says that Bear's Ears has the highest concentrations of cultural and archaeological sites, or at least among them, one of the highest concentrations of cultural and archaeological sites in the entire United States. Paleontologists, you know, dinosaur bone folks, describe Grand Staircase Escalante as a treasure trove for them to be able to study what the ancient, and we mean by ancient millions of years ago, environment was like in the American West. This is the kind of thing that careers are created around, because since its creation there, Grand Staircase Escalante, paleontologists have so far only surveyed something on the order of 6% of all of those 1.35 million acres. Incidentally, just in case you're wondering, the indigenous peoples have no objection to the paleontologists and the archaeologists, because they work in close cooperation with the tribes. So there's going to be a lawsuit, and it won't be the only lawsuit. But this is a lawsuit with standing that is hard to challenge, you know, having been there for 10, 15,000 years. The Navajo, the Hopi, the Zuni, the Ute, and the Ute Mountain Ute have all come together in this effort to save this land. And that's saying something. Because like any human groups, Native American indigenous groups do not and have not always gotten along. Some groups don't like other groups, but we know historically that some groups warred on other groups. Ethel Branch is an attorney general for the Navajo Nation, or the attorney general for the Navajo Nation, and she said that those groups, the Navajo, the Hopi, the Zuni, the Ute, and the Ute Mountain Ute, quote, have historical differences and don't typically ally. It is unique, said Sean Chapoose, who's the business committee member of the Ute Indian Tribe and a member of the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, said it is unique in this day and age for them to agreement. And this is this is an example of how desperate these times are. The Ute and the Navajo are traditional enemies. The Hopi and the Navajo are traditional enemies. Sean Chapoose went on to say, we have a tumultuous relationship, but for this particular issue, we put aside our differences because we all have a vested interest as far as the cultural significance of the artifacts and the other things located in Bear's Ears. It's in all of our best interest to work hand in hand. So that's the backdrop of Native American, of the Native American position on this. So naturally, when he showed up in Utah today, what did Marcus Aurelius have to say? We have seen how this tragic federal overreach prevents many Native Americans from having their rightful voice over the sacred land where they practice their most important ancestral and religious traditions. There was no prevention of access to the land by having it be protected. Trump was just, lying. Because he lies, I forget what the average is, something like 14 times a day. I read a statistic once that said that the average human being, and I guess none of us are particularly proud of it, depends on what kind of group you're in as to whether or not you just really cut loose, but the average human being passes gas about 13 times a day. So Trump farts and lies at about an equal rate in any given day of his miserable, misbegotten, never should have happened life. And by never should have happened, I mean the best part of him ran down his mammy's leg. And you know what's really, to get back to that quote, though, you know what's really going to prevent many Native Americans from having their rightful voice over the sacred land where they practice their most important ancestral and religious traditions? Blowing it up! Blowing it up until it isn't there anymore. Burial grounds, piffle. 10,000-year-old rock carvings, fuck it. Sacred ceremonial sites, who needs it? Because when the ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives start going off, there's not going to be much left. I can pretty much guarantee that. Because it'll have the same impact there that mountaintop removal has had here. That is to irrevocably scar the landscape such that it can no longer be a viable part of a meaningful ecology for, I think Margaret Palmer told me once, 100,000 years. Got 100,000 years to stick around and see how it plays out? No, me neither. So that's our first Moran nominee. Or our first Moran story, I guess you could say. But there's a kind of a corollary to it as well. And that is News Ninja Gene brought this to my attention. This is via the Chicago Tribune in a story from December 1st. An announcement snuck out on Friday. Somehow or another, we managed to miss it. Mining companies will no longer, according to the EPA, which we can pretty much stop calling the Environmental Protection Agency. I mean, we can call it the I need an E word, Pruitt Agency. But the EPA and the Trump administration announced this past Friday that mining companies will no longer be required. You might want to get a hockey puck for this because, if you're going to, then get it taped in real quick or else you're liable to throw it through a damn window. This is so infuriating. Mining companies will no longer be required to, in the process of acquiring permits, to blow things up and gouge things out and generally destroy a landscape and poison human beings, all for money. Mining companies will no longer be forced to prove that they actually have enough money to clean up the messes they make. You heard that right. Mining companies will not be required to prove they have the financial wherewithal to clean up their pollution. Coal mining, gold mining, silver mining, copper mining, nickel mining, tin mining, uranium mining, mining! This, of course, is another one of those moments. Because, see, the Obama administration had this crazy Kenyan Muslim usurper idea that mining companies, before they were allowed to do anything, which, they were going to be allowed to do, but they should prove that they had the money on hand to clean up after themselves if some whoopsie little industrial accident, say, poisoned an entire river or flooded a town or a region. Yep. Now, understand, mining companies have never been required to prove that they had enough money on hand to pay people that they poison, because we still don't have any acknowledgement from the government of the United States that mining poisons people. How about that? That's why we work as hard as we do on the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign and on the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 786, in this Congress. There's absolutely nothing in the laws of the United States that says that mining companies cannot poison innocent populations. Can't just kill them. Nothing there. But it was a requirement that they set aside enough money for reclamation and to clean up, well, clean up their toxic disasters in case something went sideways and they dumped a few bajillion gallons of coal waste into a river or something like that. And it, you know. But EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, Moran, well paid, said that modern mining practices, you know, they describe mountaintop removal as a modern mining practice. Quote, modern mining practices are, and the state and federal rules we already got, well, they deal with the risk from mining that are still out there operating. These rules would impose an undue burden on this important sector of the American economy and rural America, where most of these jobs are based and most of the funerals take place. No, I added the part about the funerals. Fucker. Rotten bastard. But there we go. What that's essentially saying is that, well, when the entirely kindly, well-intended mining company screws up and poisons an entire region and makes the place unlivable and requires Herculean efforts to clean up after them. Well, what we'll do is we'll stick that to the American people. You, me, we, us. We the people trying to form that more perfect union. Well, we'll help form that more perfect union by cleaning up for poor little mining companies that cannot be bothered to actually have to have the resources to clean up after themselves because, well, all that money, I mean, just laying there? Really? Just leave money laying around in case they ruin some land and air and water and people? But it's just laying there. When they could be using it to provide a Christmas bonus to a mining executive so that poor little mining executive could finally live in the lifestyle to which he had become accustomed and take a dump in a 24-karat gold solid gold, you know, toilet. That's what we're talking about here. That's the reality. Money just laying around is like a little orphan. The coal companies just want to take it and snuggle it to their bosoms. I always like saying bosoms. Just sounds soft. Bosom. It's right up there with booger. But I like bosom better. Just hug it to their bosom since they come here, little money. Let me love you. Oh, you were so cold. Are you getting warm now? Oh, you're nice, warm, warm money. Let's put you somewhere safe where them nasty old American citizens can't get at it in case it turns out we do what we always do and poison everything we touch. By the way, those modern mining techniques that will, and the rules and regulations that we have in place, there's a problem. Those modern mining techniques are a disaster in and of themselves, and you know if you listen to this program, you know what mountaintop removal does. And you also know what modern gold mining techniques do. Right, yeah. I remember the time when the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection levied a fine against Massey Energy, and then they felt so horrible about it, they let Massey pay it off in rocks. Yeah, really? It's the truth. No, we don't want your money. Just bring us a couple of dump trucks of rocks, would you? No, any old rocks will do. Get Fred Flintstone out there on the dinosaur on it. I'm sure he can get it taken care of pretty quick. Wilma! Rocks. Mm-hmm. And if you include the in the meaning of the word modern mining practices, say, the last 37 years or so, according to documents released by the EPA last year, you know, back when that one was still in our White House, at least, because they don't really know the real number, at least 52 mines and mine processing sites using modern techniques had spills or other releases of pollution since 1980. By the way, this is another one of those cases where the Obama administration didn't just leap right out there and say, you know what, we need a rule. No, a bunch of environmental groups sued the federal government to enforce a part of the Superfund law that had been ignored. And they won. So the Obama EPA had to issue the rule. Earthworks was one of the plaintiffs in that case, and Bonnie Gestring said it's galling to see the Trump administration side with industry polluters over the American taxpayer. It may be galling, but it ain't surprising. We'll see them back in court, she said. As far as the hard rock mining companies are concerned, they would have had to set aside $7.1 billion for the messes that they make. You can see why a hard rock mining company executive would be upset about that. That's $7.1 billion that could be, well, some of it could be his. That's a Lamborghini and a Maybach and a Turbo 911 golly Moses, a gold-plated, fully illuminated, genuine accessory toilet handle and platinum umbrella stands and a hummingbird tongue canapes. And well, there's a lot you can do with them billions besides clean up your damn mess when you know damn good and well that the purpose of the American people is to be fleeced by mining companies when the time comes for fleecing. That's why sheep grow wool. To be sheared, baby. National Mining Association President Hal Quinn, by the way, the National Mining Association, that's the same people who said that the birth defect study in Appalachia was invalid because hillbillies just can't help fucking their sisters and their brothers. National Mining Association President Hal Quinn said to today's action showed that reason can prevail. Because a bunch of environmentalists used litigation to force the government into what was an unnecessary rule. Oh, and why was it in the law there, Hal? Arthur wants to know, does the 24-karat gold toilet come with cup holders? Oh, you don't want to know. It comes with holders for cups and other things, too, and massagers and sprayers and blow dryers and vacuum-operated devices, if you know what I mean. Damn straight. But Hal Quinn is just happier than a pig in shit. He is. So that's pretty much the end of the filibobster for this Moran Monday. It's also an activism opportunity. Should you decide that you are aggrieved by any of this, please feel free to write your congressperson and your senators. Let them, you know, because silence, as far as they're concerned, silence is acceptance. If you're not mad about it, and you don't communicate with them about it, then they presume that you're okay with it. Let's check some emails before we move on. Let's see. Note coming in from Clarence. Subject line, Trump. He speaks with forked tongue. The history of pale-faced politics. Well, yes, it is. I mean, we preserved that for native peoples there, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante, and then we yanked it all back. Ron in Raleigh. Hell, what do we care? All them engines is dead. We need to mine, drill, frack that motherfucker for all it's worth. And then notes, I'm sure you've heard that Duke Energy has just applied for a $2-plus billion rate increase to pay for the clean air, for the cleanup, rather. $2-plus billion rate increase to pay for the cleanup of all their coal ash pits, like the one that spilled into the Dan River. Well, yes! You see, sheep are to be sheared. When these companies screw up and make horrible business decisions... Well, it's the people who need electricity who pay for it, not the precious little CEOs and CFOs and CPOs and C3POs and R2D2s of the corporate world. No, they can't pay. Well, goodness gracious, it wouldn't be their money anymore then. But we're all just standing out here. We're all outstanding in our field going, bah, bah, shear me. Clip me to the bone. You betcha. They did the same thing here, of a sort. Back when coal was monumentally expensive and West Virginians had been told once again that, my God, we're going to have forever coal. It's going to be this expensive. Oh, I tell you what, we're going to be rich. Well, I mean, not you fuckers, but we're going to be rich. That was back when Massey Energy was trading at about, $80 a share. Back before it went down to trading at, a penny a share. All them mountaintop removal workers with their profit sharing programs running around buying new bulbs for the old lady's tanning bed and buying four-wheelers and $80,000 pickup trucks. And boy, we're going to be rich. We already are. Then the bottom fell out. Well, at the same time, the folks over at Appalachian Power, the people who maintain my rickety, antiquated, doesn't work in the wind, not so good when it rains, power grid, coal-fired, well, they bought them a shit ton of coal when coal was brutally expensive, on the notion that they would then turn it around and sell it to somebody's else for equally expensive prices. Those of you who have read, say, Joseph Heller's Catch-22 know all about buying eggs in Malta for 4 cents and selling them in Pianosa for 3 cents, and everybody makes a profit, and everybody has a share. Well, then the bottom fell out, and the titans of industry and the genius captains of commerce went running to the Public Service Commission and said, we screwed up. Well, we bought high, now we're having to sell low. Would you mind if we fucked the consumers for a while and got our money back out of them? And the Public Service Commission of West Virginia said, go ahead, that's what they're for. It's not like we're here to protect them or anything. No, you screw them good. Oh, make it so they can't sit down for a month of Sundays. Go, get right to it. Which they did. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you're absolutely right, Marty. Marty says, I guess those precious little fetuses aren't quite so precious when compared to corporate profits. Why, they ain't worth a plug nickel when they're compared to corporate profits. Shit. Hell no. And by the way, a nomination coming in from Robert in Australia. Some up over Moranity. Hi, Bob. Here's some up over Moranity. Remember the 2000 Olympics? I do. Every 4 years, some poor city on Earth convinces themselves that having the Olympics would be a great thing, and then the citizens of said city and said country take it in the shorts. Remember, held here in Sydney, Australia? Why, yes. We built a brand new, really nice stadium for it, which cost $700 million. Guess what? Just 17 years later, the New South Wales government has decided to knock it down and build another stadium in its place. They've also decided to knock down and rebuild the Sydney Football Stadium while they're at it, at a cost to the taxpayer of just $2 billion Australian dollars. Both stadiums stand empty up to 90% of the time, largely used only on weekends. Depending on the event, the Olympic Stadium may be 80% full or more, two or three times a year at most. The Sydney Football Stadium is generally 50% empty, regardless of who's playing who. Now that's a crime! And by football, you mean soccer. I don't know where they play Australian rules football, but I don't know why every seat isn't filled for that. Jesus God, what a game. As usual, it's customary. The naming rights are traded between corporations who have all the best seating at any event at a stadium built by the New South Wales taxpayer, of course. Fortunately, this is now causing a big stink. Everyone but the Liberal think Republican New South Wales government are against it. A majority of the people are against it. And some of the football players who use these stadiums have spoken out against the rebuild as a huge waste of money. Everyone knows that $2 billion can be better spent elsewhere, you know, on useless things like schools and hospitals. So it's a wait-and-see situation for the moment, but if it goes ahead, the current Liberal New South Wales government may never live it down. Signed, Robert from Oz. It never ceases to amaze me the degree to which y'all catch every American disease that we come up with. And now you've got the stadium sickness. I wonder, Robert, does it also include declarations by people with expensive suits who go on television and say things like, why, this will be an economic force multiplier for the region. When you get several Australians selling hot dogs in the stands, they can then turn that into real economic clout. I probably should have used the Crocodile Kincaid voice. That would turn into real economic clout. Economic impact, you understand, your hot dog sales. Absolutely. And the kangaroo on a stick, you can't beat it. The shrimp on the babby, people will pay $50 Australian for a nice skew of barbecued shrimp. Absolutely. There, I did that. I did that not so much for Robert, but for Ron and Raleigh, who, you know, likes to hear from Crocodile Kincaid from time to time. So morans, we got them. And more. Lots and lots of, definitely morans. Lots and lots of morans. Oh, no idea how many. All right, there's Arthur. Yeah, but think of the concession stand sales. See how it works? It's a lot of hot dogs. Right. Frank fetters. Do y'all eat hot dogs in Australia? I don't know. That's a stupid question. Is everybody eats hot dogs? Well, not everybody. I mean, you know when even the vegans are trying to make things that look like hot dogs, you know it's popular. Well, thanks for the insult. Thanks for the compliment and the insult at the same time, Brother Deacon Asa. Gosh darn it, Bob, your Australian accent is so much better than your Russian one. I'm deeply offended by your criticism of Russian accent. It's work hard to make Russian accent. And you merely dismiss. It's not nice. Watch out for people with umbrellas. It's all saying. That is all. Let's take a break. Oh, goodness me. Here's what I need. The very thing. Thank you, Robert, for the inspiration. This is listener-supported conversation radio. It's More and Monday. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you know how, right? Area code 304-574-8178. Or, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Oh, okay, we've got an update from Robert in Australia. Football. It's rugby league or union in New South Wales. And one of the biggest complaints about the current stadiums is the cost of entry and the high cost and low quality of food inside. Hot dogs are available, and they're pretty good, depending on where you get them, of course. Okay. Cultural moments. Nowhere else. I bet you nobody else today was talking about hot dogs in Australia. That's what makes the horn special. And we'll be back. Jump in with your own Morin nominee if you feel so inclined. I'm Bob Kincaid. Back in a sec. Had to be, didn't it? It had to be.
Thank you.
It was irresistible. It just was. It's a mistake. Meant at work. And like I said, thanks, Robert, for providing the inspiration. Yes, I know. It's not the... it's not like that's all there is. No, there's great rock and roll in Australia. It's just that whole let's build a new stadium and stiff the taxpayers for it that made It's a Mistake pop out of the DJ rotation that exists permanently in my tiny, tormented little mind. 21 minutes past the hour, and we are joined for our first conversation on this Moran Monday, the fourth day of December 2017, by Thomas. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. I had the call because I didn't get a chance to talk to you the other day, and you had some great callers, so I'm kind of glad that
last week was an absolute dandy.
It was great, so I hope I could live up to that.
Well, there's no pressure, no stress, and damn it, no pressure, no stress, and damn it, no microwaves.
Yeah, it's not like I did when I tried to have my tape show last night and realized, you know, the video was on, everything else worked, and you know what I didn't do?
Oh, no.
I muted myself. So...
I hate it when that happens. Sometimes I kick myself out of the chat room.
I kick myself out of the show, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to do a Friday show and replay Friday show. That was good enough.
Especially given the circumstances, yes.
Yeah, well, I want to, you know me, I'm like you. I don't like not being on behind the mic. I especially don't like doing tape shows unless it's an interview. And it's
oh, if I had to record this program, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no,
it's the immediacy of working live that makes the difference.
Yeah, and the participation with our little crew we have over at FYNation.com, who I love, that are from your and Nicole Sandler's group. We have a little bit of both, and I love everybody who joins us. Now at 10 a.m., I know I keep changing the time slots, and it's probably driving everybody nuts, but that the earliest is a lot more convenient for me, and it helps out in the long run, except for when I have therapy days. That's always fun. But I love that whole connection. And especially getting instant feedback from everybody, like that whole Trumpy Bear thing. We did it. We did that on You Don't Say on Saturday. The talk about Trumpy Bear, and we found out that it's by an actual company that does made on TV products.
Yeah, it's like a modern sort of. Even skeevier version of Ronco and K-Tel.
Yeah. And it would be almost cool if it was them, you know?
Yeah, I hooked a tiny, tiny, itsy-bitsy little sun perch with the pocket fisherman one time and almost got pulled into my death.
That's not good. I'm not sorry for laughing, but that's not good at all. The only time I would ever buy, like, any of those ads, I used to work in a call center for As Seen on TV products back in the day. And it
that had to be fun.
And back in the day, they paid like $9 an hour, right? They actually paid good for for the 90s because of what you had to go through.
What you had to put up with.
Yeah.
I bought this piece of crap and it right.
Yeah, and I didn't even work at the worst part of it, which was the Nair product. I'm telling you, I don't.
Ginsu's.
Yeah, I don't even remember what it was, but I literally, this was one of those gigs where I got, where it was.
Oh, hey, back in the early aughts, I hustled AOL.
Oh, man.
I cold call hustled AOL.
One better. You remember the original Send Your Grocery company that before Peapod with, for those who know of Stop and Shop, and before Amazon delivered by drone, there was this company that went tried being national. I cold called for them. So I know. And that was
probably... Well, I mean, I just have to deal with the fact that I know that a few extra lumps of coal were thrown on the fire for me in hell for talking.
Sorry?
I know there are a few extra lumps of coal thrown on the fire in hell for me for hustling AOL.
Well, you know, as long as it was not the
$9.99 sad thing is, I was good at it.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst part with me. I was good at it, too. And, you know, the ironic thing, on my show, I can't pronounce names to save my life. Especially the hardest one. But if I got some weird caller name popping up on the screen, I'd be like, "Hello, Mr. Yabba-dabba-doo. How are you doing?" And I could turn that on and just go for it. And then the worst was the, now, you want to talk about lumps of coal? The free prescription plan.
Oh, that sounds pretty sketchy.
Okay. The free prescription plan. You hawk that, there is a special place in hell for you.
Yeah, that's right. They've just got the backward. They've got them nice and trimmed, and all the backwards pineapples are ready to go.
And I'm gonna be
that
in
was
the room.
The
with
only, the only value I ever got out of any Adam Sandler movie was that scene in Little Nicky. With Adolf Hitler in a French maid's dress getting a pineapple shoved up his ass backward for all eternity. That's the only, as far as I can tell, that's the only value to any Adam Sandler movie ever.
Well, everything has to have some value, right? Even if it's a smidgen.
Yep.
But no, I intended to call about like the FCC and everything else, because I'm really actually a little nervous about the whole net neutrality thing and what they're going to do and how I feel
nervous. I'm
behave.
Expecting them to put me off the air.
Well, that's exactly it. I'm like,
I mean, when I look at the quality of service I get from Frontier right now.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what's going to happen when all this shit gets implemented and Frontier gets, And I'll be honest, it beggars the imagination to figure out how Frontier could get worse. But I'm sure they're working on it.
Well, not only working on it, working on the packages to give you overtime, and nobody in except like Newsmax have I seen anywhere talking about it this weekend, because it was the Michael Flynn tweets
look at the stuff that's already happening. For instance, the cable company that has a monopoly on my area. One of the reasons I don't, I wouldn't mind, as long as we can pay for it, I wouldn't mind to have them as sort of a backup because it's really fast.
Yeah.
But it's metered.
Yeah. Yeah. And now what's metered now? My phone. We have a decent plan, and instead of charging extra, what they do now is if we go over our allotment, they slow our speed down instead of to like dial.
Yeah, throttling.
Yeah, they throttle the speed down, and I'm thinking, okay, that's what's going to happen, and that's gonna kill me, because we're already paying, like, for us. We have Comcrap. And I will say, for this past month, they've been amazing, because we've been able, this is the longest we've been on air continuously, 484 hours. And that includes while I was in the hospital. Okay, so we've been on air for 484 hours, and I'm amazed that we have not had a hiccup and reset. I'm sure I just jinxed it and everything. And I knew that we could do it.
But to an,
because
to an,
we've
to
done
an,
it before.
To an extent, I can understand why wireless carriers.
Yes.
Because well, no, it's not so much the throttling. It's mm-hmm. well, it's capacity on the tower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I probably just gave myself away as a total cellular internet data noob or something, but I know that what they do is when they put up infrastructure, they then it's kind of like an airline, they deliberately mm-hmm. oversell.
Oh yeah. And not only do they oversell, they oversell their network to other networks who oversell that. So, like, if you're on MetroPCS and you read the fine print, you find out what network, I think it's Sprint, but I could be wrong on that. And they're, you know, so they totally, like, absolutely, that I can practically guarantee that, as much as Obama was never a communist or a real liberal. But, yeah, no, the whole net neutrality thing scares me to death.
Cheers.
We're thanks. It's Coke though, but not the kind you sniff.
Yeah, that's Coke.
I'm not Donald. I'm not Donald
Where's
Trump.
Where's the baking
I'm
soda?
I'm not sure what that would do to my defibrillator. it might make it explode.
You don't want to find out. Because you know what? You're not Count Dicula. And you don't have some poor little Chinese guy sitting in a prison waiting, who's a perfect match for your heart, so that you can just, you know, tell him when it's time to find him guilty of something and send his fresh, warm, beating heart to stick in your chest. I mean, you don't have that kind of power.
Well, I thought he just, like, took it out, you know, like in Indiana Jones, and just grabs the heart out, and, or whatever movie that was. I don't know. I've seen too many movies lately.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait.
Yeah.
I got a cowbell here for Scott and Punky.
Oh.
This hurt. I had to mute the mic briefly. Subject line, absolute worst phone center job I ever had.
Ooh.
In the early 1990s, I shouldn't laugh. Well, goddamn it, there's another pineapple on the table for Bob. In the early 1990s, I briefly had a job taking inbound calls to set appointments for free hearing tests with an audiologist.
I think I need that, Bob. I think my mother will attest that I knew that, or I'm ignoring her.
Let that sink in for a moment, says Scott. Virtually all of the callers, what with their hearing impairment, were only able to grasp about one out of every three words I said. It was pure hell for me and for the unfortunate callers. Kind of like advertising.
You know,
I mean no disrespect, but it's kind of like advertising a course in Braille on TV.
No, that's not just
really another pineapple. Another pineapple.
Yeah, I think there's another.
Jesus,
pineapple
I'm going to take it
you.
Out. I'm going to wind up with an output contract for the entire Big Island of Hawaii if I'm not careful.
Hey, you're going to end up in the Roy Moore suite. Who are you kidding?
Meanwhile, Arthur wants to get in on the game. Hey, what's that, Sonny? A free shearling vest. Well, you know, that capitalism, it's not the hard of hearing that I worry about. It's the heart of thinking. Because we got a lot of heart of thinking out there.
Well, yes.
Jesus,
yes.
God.
In fact, I through my cousin, who I love dearly, and I will look past the fact that she's a Republican, and I will look past the fact that you know, it's mainly because of money. And I continue to love her dearly because that aside, she's not like the Republicans that are in Congress. And when you have a rational conversation, you can actually reach some kind of sentience there with her. That being said, I did find out that she had a friend who gave $1 million to Jeb Bush. And they say the poor in the Republican Party are not that bright. I'm just saying. Neither are the rich.
Wealth is not proof of intelligence, okay?
Look at our so-called president.
It's proof of love of money.
Yes. Yes. There's nothing wrong with loving money. It's what you do with it when you have it.
Of course, it's already been proven. If Donald Trump had any brains, he'd A, take them out and play marbles with them. B, if he actually had any brains, he would have taken the money that his old Klansman Pappy left him. And if he'd invested it halfway intelligently, he'd actually be really no kidding rich instead of just the skeevy little low rent grifter that he is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Although they're working hard on it with the Happy Holidays, not going to say Merry Christmas in their newsletter.
So far, I've been saying Happy Holidays for about 4 days now. And so far, I haven't gotten any cross looks or any, well, Merry Jesus to you, heathen. I haven't gotten any of those yet, but I'm ready. I'm ready if it happens with, you know, all holidays matter.
Well, which is funny. I used to get my two biggest offenses when I was working in the call center was and working on anything phones wise. I don't know why I would get so offended, but I think it was like, do you understand what I'm doing? I'm not having one of those. When someone would hang up, and before they go hang up, they'd say, have a blessed day now. And it's like, did you think before you said that? Because you just told me to have a blessed day. And clearly, at this point in time, I just had to talk to you and bother you. Or you just had to call in and bother me about something. And neither of us could see eye to eye on what you wanted.
Oh, by the way, going back for a minute to the business about Dick Cheney and ripping hearts out. I gotta give credit where credit's due. Arthur in the chat room was perfect, right? It was right, you know, on key, on point, timing, everything. Kalima! Kalima! So we got that going for us.
Awesome. See, this is why you got to do it live. This is why live is so much better. You know, the whole Bill O'Reilly thing, we'll do it live. Yeah, absolutely.
Who got sued today?
Oh, really?
Yes.
I did not feel good, so I kind of missed out on some of the news.
Well, you know, he's been running around saying, I never sexually abused or harassed anybody. These are just a bunch of nuts and sluts who wanted a quick dollar by trying to bring the Papa Bear down. I didn't do a damn thing. And so a woman sued him and said, oh, yes, you did. And you're breaching your contract of our settlement agreement by talking about it when you were supposed to not to.
Oh, he's going to get a lot of falafels in hell. Oh. Just saying.
Pineapples.
You're getting apples. Pineapples. He's getting falafels. No, getting falafels.
Yep. Rub you down with one of those. What's that thing they got in the shower there? And give you a glass of wine and rub you with my falafel.
And knowing my luck, I'm going to be the one stuck rubbing him.
And see that just it's so drunk that you can't remember the difference between loofah and falafel. I mean, that's right up there with the guy at the cast party when I was in graduate school. Just, oh, you have lovely feet.
I will say, though, one of the horrors of doing live, though...
Horrors?
Is
where?
In the early days... horrors, aside from me calling your show. when I had some say and we had a 3 in the afternoon show, we used to, I love, still to death, love this caller. And that he's a English veteran, and I will always adore Dell. However, the cooking, while live, not so much. So somebody's trying to make a point, and all of us, and he would always apologize about forgetting to mute or something. And again, I love him to death, but it was like, oh, you're doing it again, dude. So we'd have to turn it into a thing.
Oh, let's. I feel the need to bring on another Moran nominee while you're on the line with me here, Thomas.
Please.
You know, there's more Roy Moore news today.
Oh dear God, I'm glad I slept through most of the day. Then after going to the hospital for my checkup,
there's more physical evidence.
Oh, that's always good.
You know how he's been going on and on about how I want my lawyers to have that there yearbook so they can prove that ain't my real signature. Right?
Yeah.
In the name of Jesus. Well,
baby killers, those Democrats.
And I went over in fine tooth detail the fact that, well, he's free to sue Gloria Allred's client any old time he wants to. I'm sure he's got the filing fee. And he can get it in discovery and have it non-destructively tested. Well, that kind of went out the window today.
Ooh.
Because one of the women,
mm-hmm,
hey, little darling, you want a date?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, one of those women.
Even that makes me cringe.
Whose name is Debbie Wesson Gibson. Who, you know, she doesn't particularly say anything nasty about old Roy. But she said, okay, yeah, I was 17 and he was 34 and we dated and I wore it as a badge of honor. I was dating an older man, by God.
Okay.
And the Washington Post writes, Dateline Delray Beach, Florida. Debbie Wesson Gibson was in her attic hauling out boxes of Christmas decorations last week when she noticed a storage bin she said she had forgotten about. Inside was a scrapbook from her senior year of high school, and taped to a page titled Those Who Inspire was a graduation card.
Oh, no.
I mean, this is one of those Jeff Foxworthy moments. If you're 34 years old and you're sending high school graduation cards to your sweetheart, you just might be an Alabamian. I can make jokes like that because I was born there.
Yes, you can.
Happy graduation, Debbie, it read in slanted cursive handwriting. I wanted to give you this card myself. I know that you'll be a success in anything you do, Roy. The inscription, Gibson said, was written by Roy Moore, the Alabama Republican nominee for U.S. Senate, who in recent days has repeatedly denied the accounts of 5 women who told the Washington Post that he pursued them when they were teenagers and he was an assistant district attorney in his 30s. Blah, 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 backstory, 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 backstory. Shortly after the allegations first surfaced, Moore said in a radio interview with Sean Hannity that he did not know Korfman, but that he remembered Gibson as well as Gloria Thacker Deason, who had told the Post that she dated Moore when she was 18. He called each one a good girl and said that he did not remember dating them. However, at a couple of recent campaign events, he said, the allegations are completely false. They are malicious. Specifically, I do, or as they say in Alabama, specifically, I do not know any of these women. That was November 27th. Then November the 29th, down in Theodore, Alabama. I know where Theodore is. He said, let me state once again, I do not know any of these women, did not date any of these women, and have not engaged in any sexual misconduct with anyone. Notice he doesn't say I did not engage in any sexual activity. Misconduct. Words mean things. So that's when Ms. Gibson got a little hot and, you know, as in angry. She said, at first, when she found the scrapbook, she wasn't sure whether to make it public because she's received so damn many threats after the original story. You know, threats from the Christians, the followers of the Prince of Peace. I've lost Thomas. But then she said, he called me a liar. And she said she not only openly dated Moore when she was 17, but later joined him in passing out flyers during his campaign for circuit court judge in 1982 and exchanged Christmas cards with him over the years. Roy Moore made an egregious mistake to attack that one thing, my integrity. The Moore campaign did not respond to numerous requests for comment for this story. So, there we go.
But don't worry. The Democrat is the baby killer.
Right. So, because he don't love the precious little fetuses.
And Roy Moore is going to vote on the tax cut bill.
Yep. Yeah, but see, I want to deal with something real quick, if you don't mind, Thomas.
Please. Oh, okay. It's your show, and I just, you know, had my strength drop on me.
By the way, Tara's pointing out.
Which I pay for.
By the way, Tara's pointing out, yes, they're real Christians. Absolutely.
Praise Jesus.
So, if I could get Democrats of all stripes, be they centrists or mugwumps or even progressives or what have you. If I could get them to stop saying, well, Roy Moore's going to be elected senator. It's just going to happen. I'm sorry. It's just going to happen. Stop that. The election is 7 days from now. Polls will open Tuesday morning, December the 12th at Sparrow's Fart Dawn, and there's a week of campaigning yet to go, and I'm astonished, not really astonished, okay, I'm disheartened by the number of people supposedly on our side who are running around just saying that all the back-breaking, hard-ass work being done by a shit ton of people in Alabama who are our friends, our neighbors, and our allies, and our fellow Democrats, that it's all for naught, because Roy Moore's going to win. You know what? It's an election.
No.
Roy Moore may win. He may. But the fact of the matter is, and I reiterate this, he got to be the Republican nominee with exactly 7.5% of the eligible electorate in Alabama. I've been talking to some of my sources down there. My sources, like I'm a real live, honest-to-God journalist, which I'm not. I've been talking to people I know down there, friends, acquaintances, old colleagues, what have you. And if you just do a general survey, just by counting yard signs, it's running 10, 15, and 20 to 1 against Roy Moore. For every one Roy Moore sign, you'll see 10, 15, 20 Doug Joneses.
You know what?
We've got a bunch of goddamn genius Democrats running around with their crystal ball saying Roy Moore's going to win.
Can I throw something in there with that?
Yeah.
That is the yard signs is telling, and I will throw in my Republican mayor who won a third term in my hometown, who I voted for because he actually ran an election, and I actually, you know, knew he wanted the job and wasn't, and I may have been completely snowed on this, but he felt like he wanted to be in the seat and wanted to do and had the people to be there. And you saw the yard signs and you knew he's going to win. And I didn't just vote for him because I wanted to vote for a winner, though that did help. I voted for a lot of Democrats that I knew and I trusted too. That being said, when I voted for this guy for mayor, The yard sign thing is a good tell, especially when it comes to dealing with indicators on the ground and how they're operating and how the campaign is operating and how the campaign really feels without being inside the campaign. And that is, to me, is a good tell. And I think you're absolutely right that I for once have never said, at least I don't think that I've never said that Doug Jones is going to lose. I think I said he might lose, but I don't think that, you know, and that's only because of the right wing rhetoric that they're dumping on Alabama, you know. And not because of the
Thomas, it just pisses me off.
Oh no, it pisses me off
because I'm not making sport of anybody anywhere else, but there are places in this country where it is a hell of a lot easier to be liberal, to be progressive, than it is to be liberal or progressive or even a Democrat in Alabama.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's say you're an actual real, you know, lives by the words of Jesus Christ Christian, and you're a Democrat, mm-hmm. They will run you out of your church down there.
Yeah. Look what they did to, what was it? And he wasn't even in Alabama, I don't think. General Lee's great-grandson or grandson.
Oh, yeah, they took his church away from him.
Yeah, I mean, look what they did for him for preaching the truth. You know, I mean, we have some good allies that we shouldn't just shun away, and
they'll beat the shit out of your kids at school.
Yeah,
that story's somewhere in the stack. You can lose your job.
Right to work, fire.
And people still, and they still remain committed to their values.
Yes.
And so it's just, and I've seen, you know, I've seen some real high-toned, highfalutin liberals and Democrats and what progressives, whatever we're calling ourselves these days,
mm-hmm.
just saying, well, Roy Moore's going to win. The incumbent mayor of Birmingham has done everything in his power to get his electoral base fired up to go and vote for Doug Jones. People are campaigning all over. Doug Jones raised $9 million to Roy Moore's $1 million in the last fundraising quarter.
And you know why you don't hear that on corporate media? Because they want it to be all about the allegations and not about the fact that Doug Moore is an actual candidate. Whether you like all of his policies or not, he's an actual Democratic candidate that could possibly win and really do some good on our side.
So here's the Moran nomination.
Please.
We all remember that the chief Slimer of Anita Hill, and by the way, I still believe Anita Hill.
So do I.
The chief Slimer was a vicious old hyper-partisan, godforsaken, right-wing piece of crap from Utah named Orrin Hatch.
Mm-hmm.
And asked about Roy Moore today, Orrin Hatch, who, if for instance, Sherrod Brown says something to him about this tax scam being for the rich, well, Orrin gets his little maiden forms all in a bunch and says, "I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I've spent my stinking career here," and works up a real high-toned "me thinks he doth protest too much" speech. So they asked him about Roy mm-hmm. Moore, and he said, "We'll just have to see. Assuming he wins, we'll have to see. Many of the things that he allegedly did were decades ago, so, you know, it's hard." Decades ago, just like Clarence Thomas there, Orrin, you old fuck. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
I loathe that nasty old man. He's everything that is wrong with this country. And by the way, naturally, the goddess of irony has him in her hands, and that's why he said at the end, it's hard.
Naturally.
Many of the things he allegedly did were decades ago. Oh, well, I get you. Assuming you take the official version, Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy decades ago. I guess if Lee Harvey Oswald was still alive, Orrin Hatch would say, well, you know, that was decades ago.
And he was a Democrat, baby cook.
I mean, they lynched Joseph Smith a century and decades ago. I guess it's okay now. But you know, this is disgusting, because now people like McConnell are walking it back and saying, well, you know, we can probably, you know, if the voters of Alabama elect him, you know, I guess we can just have a child molester in the Senate.
Yeah, I talked about that on Sunday. That is just gross what they're willing to do for.
And it
for
is not power. It is not lost on me that we are finding out the absolute truth about evangelical Christians here, let's see, exactly 3 weeks before they celebrate the birth of their Savior.
Yep.
And, you know, there's nothing, I don't remember reading in the Gospel, suffer the little children to come unto me and sit on my lap and let me diddle them. I don't remember that part being in there.
Yeah, neither do I. Well, I was Catholic, so, sorry.
Well, you weren't expected to know what was in the Bible anyway, so.
Well, that's true. We just sit, bow, kneel. My mother's going to hear this someday. but no, you're absolutely right. Orrin Hatch is one of the biggest hypocrites in the Republican Party, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad that I'm out of it and don't have to defend any of this crap, because it's indefensible. It really is. And anybody who does, and anybody who gets upset about it, really needs to have their head examined. And I'm the one who fell on my head three weeks ago now. You know. And it drives me absolutely batty. But I want to leave on a good note before I get out of here and somebody else will call with the next hour and be a little bit more funny than me. Going in and dealing with this, with everything, was a real eye-opener about what we have in difference with the Republicans. I know there are some liberals who I adore, who I won't name, but I adore them, and they say they're the same, but a different, the line is, they're the same, but on a different corporate coin, and all
oh,
that
the,
stuff.
Oh, you mean a different side of the same corporate coin? Oh, you mean the same people who go, fucking DNC, Bernie would have won. You mean that bunch?
Yeah, and that bunch. And there are some very good, well-meaning people in that bunch. That being said, they are still wrong. Look at Roy Moore, and look at how we deal on the Democratic side with people who are accused. Just accused. And then look at the difference, and then come back and tell me that, or keep your mouth shut. Because that, to me, is the big difference in any Democratic person. Every Democratic person that I know has smartly condemned Roy Moore, and then there are some who have mostly condemned the ones who have done that in Congress or whatever when stuff has hit the fan with particular ones. But nobody on the Democratic side that I can tell, unless I've been really fell on my head too hard, has said what Mitch McConnell has said, what Orrin Hatch has said, and everything else just to win a damn seat. And when they do that, I will leave the Democratic Party.
I understand.
Just because I love the Republican Party.
Thomas, thank you very kindly. I'm glad you're feeling better. I really appreciate you jingling in.
And I appreciate you letting me back in after my Skype decided to go throttle myself.
And just in case you're wondering, I have refrained, because it's a real pain, because the bandwidth is so shitty right now. I have refrained, but also primarily because I know you're in recuperation recovery mode. I have refrained from uploading show files there for you to archive.
Okay.
Because I just didn't want you doing the damn work.
Oh, please. The work is part of the fun. But I love you, Bob, and you know that. And I love our community on the FYI Nation side and the head-on side. And even when we disagree on certain things, you know, we're all family, and that's what family's supposed to be.
Yeah, the Convention of the States is still a disastrous idea. I don't care what you think.
Yeah.
All right, you take care, Thomas.
Yes, my love.
Bye-bye. Now. That's our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. So we will take a quick break and then see who wants to get into the conversation. Note coming from Scott and Punky. Orrin Hatch's comment, "Naturally, it's hard," said Senator Hatch. Of course, with these prehistoric bastards, and given the absence of Viagra, it's equally true that it's not hard, naturally. Well played, Scott. Well played. Okay, so just an ever so brief break. If you want to jump in on the and you know, hey, by the way, we love first time callers here. We love new callers. If you can't call this program and have a good time, and not you know, faint or whatever, you just can't. This is about the easiest program to have a conversation on that you could possibly imagine. You're welcome to join in if you've never participated, or if you've participated. Either way is fine. We got more morons, including an extension of the nomination of nasty old Orrin Hatch, and it's all on the way in short order. But before we do that, a long-distance dedication going out to Roy Moore down in Alabama. This one's for you, Roy.
She was only 16, only 16, but I loved her so. She was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. We'd laugh and we'd sing and do funny things, and it made our hearts glow. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. So why did I give my heart so fast? It never will happen again. But I was a mere child of 16. I've aged a year since then. She was only 16, only 16. Ooh, with eyes that would glow. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. She was only 16, only 16. felt so. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. Yes, she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young. I was much too young to know.
A long distance dedication going out to old Roy down in Alabama, Dr. Hook, and only 16. The difference being that the protagonist singing in that song is the same age as the 16-year-old girl. If you rewrote it for Roy, it'd be like, she was only 16, and I was 34. Okie dokie. Let's run over to the Skype line and see what Jim's got on his mind. Hey, Jim.
What's going on?
More in Monday, man.
I'm still hoarding on work release. So hell, Bob, I can't even give it away, much less sell it.
I hate it for you. I really, really do.
I know. Particularly when I used to be so career-oriented. Well, what can I say? All good things have come to an end. Anyway, we have to break up. And was he talking about women or women?
Yeah, I know. Okay, you get a
little, really.
You get a minor jingle for that. Yes.
Well, you know, I've been watching the news about the ongoings with, Ric Flair in the White House. And, I wonder how long it's going to take him to nail his fucking ass.
Hard to know. I mean,
you know, there ain't no way. I mean, what's he going to have to kill half the FBI?
The latest, and you know
it's like FBI, don't you?
The latest, of course, being the Moran nomination of what's his name, John Dowd, the president's personal lawyer, who channeled his inner Nixon today.
He cannot break the law. He is the chief law enforcement officer of the nation.
If the president
does it,
it isn't illegal.
Yeah, that's what he said about Adolf Hitler, because he made the law. Everything he said was law, and he couldn't break it.
Well, Nixon said it about himself after he resigned in the David Frost interviews. If the president does it's not illegal.
Well, I'm afraid it didn't quite work out that way now, did it? And I think if we could talk to him on a Ouija board, he would say, whoops, slipped up on that one.
But the fact of the matter is, this is moving much faster than, say, Ken Starr moved. I think it's a little bit easier. I mean, look, consider, okay, so the reason Dowd had to say what he said was because of the tweet that, you know, and it's just, I can't believe I live in a time when we're talking, when we use the word tweet in serious conversation to discuss a presidential pronouncement. But anyway, it took a little while, which means that they took his phone away from him, I'm sorry, sir, you're out of bandwidth for the month. The Wi-Fi's broken. The dog ate it.
Didn't somebody knock his tweet out? His tweeter off his tweeter.
But by Saturday, he was up and tweeting about the Flynn plea, and was shedding great big tears for Michael Flynn, and along the way said, I had to fire Michael Flynn because he lied to the vice president and to the FBI.
They ruined him too, Bob. They ruined him.
Oh, I know,
but
Jim, the important line is because he lied to the vice president and the FBI.
So that would indicate.
Oh yeah.
That because everything before that was because he lied. He fired him because he lied to the vice president. You know, Mike Pencil, that geek. There was never anything said about lying to the FBI because Trump didn't know that he had lied to the FBI.
Well,
so
he knows it now.
But the thing is, what that constituted was an admission of obstruction of justice. That tweet,
exactly.
All by itself, was exactly that. So the lawyer has to go into damage control mode. And he said, well, you know, I drafted that tweet, and I dictated it to Dan Scavino over there, the manager of social media, and he sent it out. Well, if I'm Dan Scavino, thanks so much. You just sent me up the river. Because now Mr. Mueller might want to have a little chat with Mr. Scavino, and the question will become one of whether or not he wants to take the fall by himself, or he wants to take anybody with him, because that's what Dowd did. He set up Dan Scavino and arguably set up himself.
Yeah, he sure did.
What Dowd did could conceivably be thought of as legal malpractice.
You know, Bob, I'll tell you something. When an FBI comes to speak to you, you don't have to talk to him. But if you go talk to that man, you better tell him the truth. Because for every lie, you're doing at least 5 years. You cannot fuck around with these people. And what Trump is doing, he is enraging those people to the point where they are going to get him one way or the other. And I'm sure that J. Edgar Hoover would love to see this. His beloved FBI, which is a good agency, one of the best police forces in the world, to see them let somebody drag their nose through shit, they're not going to get away with this.
Well,
he's not going to get away with this.
They have been parts good and parts evil, depending on when you're talking about them.
Well, let's put it this way. You know, right now they're our sons of bitches.
Well, that's true. Sons of bitches, but our son. No, I get that. But, you know, when they were tormenting Dr. King, not so good.
Well, you know, we can't talk about that now. We're talking about now. And we're talking about.
And what I'm talking about is largely, yeah, in the post-Hoover era, there have been efforts to professionalize and decriminalize the FBI.
Well, Hoover was an absolute jerk. I mean, you know, he'd been there for long. And I think Hoover was part black and hated it. And he was gay. And the mafia had the goods on him, so he couldn't do anything. And so when he would go to his parties, he would dress up and probably play tapes of Martin Luther King having sex in some motel. I mean, that's who was, you know, that was his own private predilection. And hell, when his lover, Boy Tolson, died, they even put the wrong epitaph in the damn paper.
Oh, Clyde Tolson?
Mm-hmm. Clyde Tolson, excuse me. I get Joy Boy Roy sometimes mixed with somebody. I can't even say Roy anymore. Because I think of Roy Cohn. I think of everything but Roy Rogers.
Yeah, I was going to say, Roy Rogers is the only one you.
But I call this asshole in Alabama Mr. Roy Joy Boy. And, you know, I don't know if you ever saw The Loved One, but he sort of reminds me of Mr. Joy Boy.
I not only saw it, I read it.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I have a picture on my tablet of some girl pulling up a Jones yard sign. So they've gotten that desperate, but they're having to send people around to pull up Jones yard signs. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, and I've also seen the church bulletin board sign outside the Tabernacle of Faith or whatever it is. They falsely accused Jesus too. Vote Roy Moore.
Boy, I'll tell you that they really get into that, don't they? Yeah, you know, that shows you how much they really think of the leader of their faith, or the man around whom their faith was based. Because if any of them were really truly Christian and honorable Christian, they would not even mention the name of Christ in the same breath as that of Roy Moore, this old lech. Humbert Humbert, you know, Lolita. Yeah.
Well, and
I mean,
and,
God,
yeah,
damn.
And Claire Quilty. Don't forget, if you're going to go to that book, don't forget Claire Quilty. He was the real
true.
Villain of the piece.
Yeah, true. But I mean, you know, Trump out there in Utah was that business of what he was saying. Excuse me, I just had to light a cigarette. I just cannot believe that he was actually saying that shit. I mean, when I thought about what they're going to do to those sacred Indian sites, I was thinking of what the Taliban did to those places of the Buddha or whomever it was that they destroyed.
Oh, Bamiyan, the Buddhas, so, yeah.
Yeah, so what's the difference?
There's that's been a running theme in this program over the years. It's not the individual religious system, it's the fundamentalization of it. A fundamentalist Christian is as dangerous as a fundamentalist Muslim, as a fundamentalist Hindu, as a fundamentalist Buddhist, okay? It's worth remembering that the atrocities in it was a Buddhist majority that committed the atrocities in, oh God, where was the where were the Tamil people? But those were slaughters perpetrated by, you know, Buddhists. Any religion can be practiced peacefully, and you and I part company on, and that's okay. We're not here to talk about that. I don't care much for religion. I don't care much for religion generally, but it can be practiced peacefully.
Well, I've never said that it couldn't. Now, give me a break here. And I've never said that.
No, that's what I'm saying. We won't generally go into the theology of anything, but I freely acknowledge that various faiths can be practiced peacefully, but it is when the fundamentalists get control that it becomes militarized, weaponized, and murderized.
Oh, you're right there. Absolutely.
And that is the Southern Baptist Convention every bit as much as it's the Wahhabi Muslims.
You know, what has gotten into these people? I mean, are they that blind that they can't understand what they're doing?
They understand. Look, these Southern Baptists. Yeah, I mean, I was raised this way. Okay, there was not a person of color in the entire church. And they claim that they
well,
have
thank
since.
God, I wasn't.
They claim that they have since mended their ways, but it's hard to purge that stuff out of a system. What they do. Is they use their faith as a mechanism of political and social control.
Let me ask you this. Didn't the Baptists have a big schism between Northern Baptists and Southern Baptists and Middle Baptists or 40-gallon Baptists or foot-washing Baptists? How many different sects of them are?
Baptists have always been an independent lot. You know, part of, and it's the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, so, you know, part and parcel of the Protestant Reformation was recognizing, in many instances, no centralized head of any faith. So, Baptists tried to, for a very long time, practice a democratic form of their faith, and they still do it, you know, pro forma. They meet and they vote. For instance, they threw a church out of communication from Tennessee at one of their conclaves or whatever recently because that church had ordained a woman to preach.
Really?
So they excommunicated the church from their group.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry. Forgive me for not keeping up with such times.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the Roman Catholic Church that doesn't ordain women. But so then you know you get the breakdowns between the free wills and soft shells and hard shells, but yeah, there was a breach. The Southern Baptist Convention was born out of racism. Okay, the Southern Baptist Church was born out of opposition to the civil rights movement in many ways.
Let me ask you a question, sir.
Go.
How in the world, with so many different sects and beliefs, this, that, and the other, or whatever they call it, how can they even keep it straight? I mean, how can they? I don't understand this. I've never, I'm not denying what you said, but it's just real hard for me to handle this. Because, you know, in spite of our religious problems, I've always been pretty doctrinaire, true?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've never heard me get on there and carry on like, and
I do. No, you never come on here and carried on like I do. No, absolutely not.
No, I wouldn't do it.
You've got the American Baptists, and they're the Baptists that aren't Southern Baptists. But then there's the Free Will Baptists and the Independent Baptists. Here in my little town, we've got a Southern Baptist church and an American Baptist church. I can't tell much difference between the two because they're both full of freaking hate.
Well, don't forget, there's the 40-gallon Baptist and the 1-gallon Baptist. And those I remember from South Carolina, because they said it was equally as much of a sin to drink 1 gallon of whiskey as it is to drink 40. And that was set up in Greenville, South Carolina. Well, guess what in Greenville County was per capita consumption of liquor?
Oh, through the roof. Look.
Higher than that of Charleston, South Carolina,
the
sin city.
The two biggest consumers of porn in the United States are Southern Baptists and Mormons.
Oh, God.
And that's fact.
Well, but
they're right. You know, it's equally, and you know what? It's equally as much of a sin to, and there's other sects, you know, let's not just beat on the Baptists, because the Church of Christ is a bunch of weird people. You know, these are the folks that won't even allow so much as a kazoo into their church. It's all a cappella. And you got to sing and make melody in thy heart, because it says right there in the Psalms. And they're bizarre. They're a bizarre lot. And
see, Bob, all this is new to me. I never got.
They've been around for a century and a half or two.
Near that kind of stuff.
The Baptists trace their lineage back to and rightfully, truly so. To a dissenter from Massachusetts Puritanism named Roger Williams.
Oh, God, him. I do remember him. Lord have mercy. You know, these people are so filled and so consumed with their own ignorance and their predilection toward the hurting of other people that they can't see anything else. But they're such hypocrites that they'll go home and after a day of preaching or whatever they do, slip in something in the VCR that's got two people going at it.
Oh, the church I went to was rent in twain when I was a boy, because the minister of music decided to have a torrid affair with some deacon's wife. And they took about half the congregation with them and went out and formed their own church. Southern Baptist Church, of course. Oh, I remember that well. They're hotbeds of, it's all a matter of society and culture. Groups of human beings are going to do that, whether they're Catholic or Muslim or Jewish or what have you. But, you know, there's an old story, for instance, about the Church of Christ minister. He was having a torrid affair with a deacon's wife. And, I mean, they were going at it. And they was both just as naked as the... And that's naked, N-E-K-K-I-D. I know, you being Southern, you understand the difference between naked
I
and
do,
naked.
Sir. Yeah, I do, sir. I do. I do indeed, sir.
And they was,
you,
both,
sir.
They was both just as naked as the day they was born. And he had picked her up. And she had her legs wrapped around his waist, and they was a standing up and a going at it, and they looked up and realized they was right in front of the picture window.
And she said, or he said, glory.
And he said, get down. Somebody's liable to see us and think we're dancing.
Oh, my God. Oh, Lord have mercy.
But these bunches have always exercised control in places like Alabama. I highly recommend to you, you know, I had the interview with him a week or so ago. You really should do yourself a favor, Jim, and get your, because you can get it on Kindle or whatever. If you like hardback books, that's cool too. You need to get Jeff Bigger's book, Trials of a Scold. Because Ann Royal was out there documenting these religious monstrosities 150 years ago.
Now, what's the last word? How do you spell that?
The Trials of a Scold, S-C-O-L-D. She was
as
the
in cold.
S-C-O-L-D. She was the last woman.
Oh, scold.
She
okay.
was the last woman tried as a public scold in this country. And they were going, you know, they were going to dunk her in the Potomac River and kill her. Because she was making life miserable for the religious hypocrites and the Sadducees and the Pharisees in government of her day.
Oh my Lord!
And,
yeah,
and
I can
and,
believe that.
And her and the one of the reasons they did that, one of the principal targets of her invective were the religious freaks of the Great Awakening or the Second Great Awakening.
Right,
and
right,
I know you know what that is.
Oh, I do. Yes, indeed.
When the country expands past the Alleghenies, it takes with it not the upright and genteel Episcopalianism of the gentried, you know, planter class of the Piedmont and the Low Countries. Oh, hell no! And they took with them a fire and brimstone, snake handling, floor rolling brand of religion that was known as the Second Great Awakening. And so as it moved into the frontier, and at that point in time the frontier was Alabama and Mississippi and Western Tennessee and Western Kentucky and Indiana and Illinois, as it did that,
and
those faiths exercised control over not so much the well-heeled, because the planter class was still out there building their Episcopal churches and so forth, but of the dirt farmers and the poor whites.
But yet, Bob, the Episcopal Church was the first church in the South to take in black people. Even Robert E. Lee, whom you hate, after the war, when he was at Mass at the Episcopal Church, went to take communion, or a black man had gone to take communion, and Robert E. Lee went and took communion right by him.
Well, and the same can be said. I mean, you talk about an evil. We've talked about on this program when the folks at Georgetown University, those priests, Roman Catholic priests, they kept Georgetown alive by selling off a whole bunch of their slaves. That's where the concept of selling down the river comes from, and the enslaved African Americans had been baptized into the Roman Catholic Church and were sold as far away as Louisiana, and lo and behold, regardless of the evil that those priests had done, they sat there and worried their little beads over the fact that their parishioners now had no church to go to.
Mm-hmm. And I can remember how Roman Catholics were looked down upon. And, of course, they said it was because the Roman Catholics looked down on them. And, you know, it was just one gigantic clusterfuck. That's all it was, a Charlie Foxtrot. That's exactly what the whole thing is. It's just ridiculous. The whole thing is just absurd and ridiculous. But the trouble is, it is, in fact, reality. And now, going back to what we were talking about before, you've got Joy Boy Moore about to be elected to the Senate, and they will seat him.
Well, let's not prematurely admit the pedophile to the palace, Jim.
I'm not saying that he's going to win, but if he does, I mean, you know, I'm definitely not going to give up on that, because I do believe that Jones has a chance over this guy. But if these people are so, I don't know, misdirected and disaffected and discollected, that they're going to put that man in the Senate. Well, you know, to tell you the truth, Bob, as far as the seated Senate is concerned, I don't know which ones will be in worse company.
Well, he'll be welcomed with open arms by the likes of Orrin Hatch, because Orrin Hatch didn't have any problem sliming Anita Hill. And
I remember that. And you know, I certainly always believed that Anita Hill was totally innocent, and it was horrible what happened to him. As a matter of fact, there is an Anita Hill Society in Columbia, South Carolina, and they have Anita Hill dinners to remember what happened to her. I have a good friend who is a member of it, who founded it.
Well, not only was she innocent, she had done no wrong. The important thing, Jim, is that she was a truth teller. And truth...
Exactly.
Truth of something like that to a Republican is the same thing as garlic to a vampire.
Oh, yeah, you got it. You got it, absolutely. Or wolfbane to a werewolf or whatever you are, because, I mean, they can't stand the sight of it, and they can't stand the sound of it. And they'll do anything they can to eradicate it. I mean, once you get them on their haunches, it doesn't take just a slight of something that they find offensive. They're going to root it out and pluck it out.
And there is nothing, Jim, that a Republican will not tolerate in order to maintain a death grip on power. Because that's what this all comes down to. I mean, I want to make abundantly clear, you know, the tax scam that went through at 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, courtesy of the Senate. You know, a bill that hadn't, they were voting on a bill that hadn't even been written. Okay?
I know. Now, I saw it go through.
But understand that they, and this is important, that wasn't because of Donald Trump. That was because of Republican philosophy. That bill would have come up whether the president was Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, John Kasich, Jeb Bush. But to return to a theme that just won't go away, when that bill ultimately lands on Donald Trump's desk, he's going to sign it into law.
Of course he will. You know he will.
Okay, you tell me what Hillary Clinton would have done with that bill.
I think Hillary Clinton wouldn't have touched it. I think she would have given it a pocket veto.
I think she would have vetoed it while it was still in the air before it landed on her desk. And then she would have peed on it, taken it out in the Rose Garden, set fire to it, and set a black mass over it at midnight.
Maybe so, but I think she would have did a pocket veto. Probably. Maybe. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, you know. It's 50-50 either way.
Because, see, she was not afraid, as she proved in the hearings, on the one occasion where Trey Gowdy sweat like a wax dummy with the heat turned up. She wasn't afraid to go toe-to-toe with those evil monsters.
No, she wasn't, was she? How many hours was she in that seat?
11.
11, exactly.
And took everything they had to throw at her and gave back as good as she got, and, you know, they had nothing.
And she responded with the greatest amount of equanimity and poise. And she also had the facts to back it up, and they could not crack her.
But you've still got people out there, crooked Hillary. Yeah. Donald Trump says crooked Hillary, and there are still alleged progressives on our side who go, yeah.
Well, they're a bunch of goddamn fools. I mean, what do they have against this woman? You know, give me a second here, will you please? Hillary Clinton, when Big Bill was caught doing what he shouldn't in the Oval Office with a stain on his dress. Now, there are a lot of people say, oh, I divorced him in a heartbeat. And you just say, no, she did not. She took it. and she dealt with it. And she took that horrible incident of infidelity and with her own aplomb and ability and ladylike poise, she kept that marriage together, and she took shit and made something else out of it. And it wasn't Shinola. And I will always have the greatest respect for her because she behaved like a lady. She behaved like someone who was responsible first lady of this country and was not about to let any jealousy
among other things, Jim, she did what the Republicans said women are supposed to do. Not walk out on their marriage. Work on fixing it, making it better.
That's what she did. Exactly. Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. And, you know, they're still together. I mean, I'm not saying it ever was or ever is. There will be Romeo and Juliet. But, you know, they've got children. They've got grandchildren. And old Bill, in spite of all the shit he pulled, and I still have a lot of things about him that are in my craw, he's still sort of like a minor, revered elder statesman now. But, I mean, you know, they kept it together.
He had a mind like, he had, and I presume still has, a mind like a steel trap. But it was also one of those things where that which elevates can also curse. That which blesses can also curse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was too smart for his own damn good in some ways.
True, he was.
You know,
with that mentality,
with the backward lens of history, which renders our vision 20/20 all the time. We can say, as I have said, that there was probably no appreciable difference in having Bill Clinton in the long run, in having Bill Clinton in the White House versus having George H.W. Bush in the White House. H.W. would have had to leave in 1996. Maybe Clinton would have come along then. Who knows? A lot of the major policy disasters that we got out of that era, we would have gotten one way or the other. And that's fact. That's fact.
Well, you know, old Copperfield, he was still infinitely preferable to anything we've got now, that's for damn sure.
And
you know, there
but
you
if,
go.
But if you,
and,
but if you can't look, if you can't pull yourself back from your own and your own prejudices and look dispassionately at where we are right now and say one simple thing, to wit, we would be better off if Hillary Clinton was president than we are with Donald Trump as president. Well, you know, at that point in time, you're just a neophyte. You're not to be taken seriously.
Yeah, but so many people are taken seriously who subscribe to that doctrine. And I will never, ever choose him over her. I did not vote for him. I could not stand him. I thought he was a piece of shit. I knew him my days in New York. What an asshole and a philanderer and a thief that he was. I mean, he supposedly hired so many people. Yeah, mm-hmm. He hired them all right. They went bankrupt and they all went in the toilet. I knew all about Donald Trump. I used to go to New York every summer. And I had friends his name was just a mud. And do you think that bastard could get credit from any bank in New York? Do you think Bank of America would lend him a cent?
No, he burned everybody who ever loaned him a penny.
I did. I mean, the only other alternative he had was to go to Moscow. That's exactly what he's done. Now, you know, and going into him, we talked about this before. This thing in North Korea. Now we're gonna, if we don't mind, if we can like change horses here for a second. I've been watching.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
And I've been watching the TV, and I've been listening to a lot of stuff, and I've been around this stuff, and you know, we are on the verge of going to war. I mean, we have activity going on over there. We've got Senator Graham. Funding for American government. Remember that organization?
Oh, yeah.
Telling people they ought to leave. Now, this is the stuff of which the prelim of a war is made. And now they're trying to get pieces of these, or if they can find pieces of these North Korean missiles, because they can then discover where they got their parts from, whether it was from Russia, China, or wherever. And all this stuff is being rolled up into one big ball, and now they have a missile that is capable of reaching the continental United States. Now, that is effective. They do.
Well,
they have.
It is. But I gotta offer one little caveat, Jim.
I hope you can, sir.
Do you really think Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants is just crazy?
He might be. No, I think he's just.
Because I mean, I haven't seen any photographs of him running down Main Street Pyongyang naked as the day he was born, with nothing on but a pair of clown shoes and a ukulele.
No, he didn't have to do that. I mean, good Lord, he didn't have to do that. But I think he is just basically he is a clever fox in his own right. He is. The push comes to shove, like that China, because they do not wish to see that type of involvement in their own backyards. He has their tacit concern and not only agreement. If we think that if we get into a North Korea, that Putin or are going to back us, we got enough.
No, that's right. And it's understood. It is understood. At least, God, I hope it's understood. I don't know if there's anybody at the State Department. I don't know if there's anybody at the State Department left to understand. But if we
they don't have anybody, Bob.
If we
they don't have anybody.
If we initiate hostilities against North Korea, if we shoot first, China, not North Korea, shoots back. Because it's the same kind of bullshit agreements, a network of bullshit agreements that obtained in 1914.
Exactly. We're right back in 1914, where each side, you know, basically, it all fall. It's just like the Guns of August all over again. That's exactly what it is. And you know,
this is a game, then, Jim. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But this is a game that Trump is playing very dangerously, to try to provoke North Korea into providing casus belli. Because he wants a war. He's not going to feel like he's not going to feel like a real stiff dick president until he's got some poor mother's sons and daughters out there getting blown into a million tiny pieces and
you know,
tens of thousands of
war?
Them.
You know, the reason he really wants that war or something like that is to deflect the outcome of the investigations that will put him in jail.
Now, see, I disagree, Jim.
There.
I disagree.
I think
he wants that war as a function of his own sick, twisted, diseased, egomaniac, megalomaniac, narcissistic mind.
Isn't that part of what I just said? He'd be willing to take the whole world with him? Because that's exactly what he's doing in order to deflect.
Oh, but see, Jim, he doesn't admit of the possibility that he won't win. Because he always wins. Winning is what he does. We're going to get sick of all the winning.
Well, so did Adolf Hitler. You know, he said, we're going to win. We got it. Yeah.
And I imagine there are still a few men left who might be able to tell him, if he would listen, which he won't, that it's an awful damn hard walk back from Chosin Reservoir.
It'd be greater than Chosin Reservoir. It'll be the whole thing. It'll be the whole entire peninsula. I mean, we're talking about something that's going to bring us into a complete worldwide conflagration. Because, Bob, once you start something like that, you can't stop it. I mean, once you go into snap count after he initiates the order, you can't stop it.
Well, you know we've sent some of our invisible fighter jets over there, right?
The sky is littered with those jets, and you know, and you've got Miss Graham from South Carolina telling people to get out.
Oh, now, hold on, Jim. We're gonna kind of change subjects here. You just said Miss Graham, and you're not allowed to say that.
True.
Because the purity ponies will get all mad at you because they got all mad at Joy Reid over on MSNBC for something she wrote 11 years ago when she referred to Miss Charlie Crist. Back when
I'd be called Miss Anderson. I mean, I don't give a shit.
I understand that, but you're gonna get
well,
the
good. Let them do it. I don't give a shit.
You're gonna
tell
get the sparkle
Alice
fart powered
Anderson
unicorn cavalry purity brigade on you, and you don't
well,
want.
Well, fine.
But
that's
you know,
good.
But no, I was mentioning this because it's funny because I read a tweet earlier today where Glenn Greenwald was waxing apoplectic over that Joy Reid stuff that she wrote 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was way up on his moral high horse. Talking about how that's trans baiting and gay baiting and all of that. Glenn's gay, of course.
Of course, and I am too. I've told you that many times.
Yeah,
makes
no never mind to me. But here's the thing. Glenn's so far up on his high horse that he can't even see his own past. Because way back, Glenn Greenwald was actually engaged in the exploitation of gay men. Because he was a part owner of a gay porn movie company called, incidentally, Hairy Jocks.
I never saw that one.
But well,
as a matter of fact, if I may say this, I never could really get into porn. Never. I mean, for me, and I'm
bless
just
your heart, bless your heart, Jim. Your mind was dirtier than anything that a porn producer could probably come up with, wasn't it?
Me, excusez-moi, monsieur. Vous. Well, you could say let me put it this way. I had my moments in the sun. I did. But I sure as hell never had any complaints. And I never made a dollar off of it.
Right, but you see the point I'm making. You know, the porn industry is notorious for exploiting the people who participate in it.
Well,
and,
yeah, I guess so. I mean, who was that girl who was in John Waters' movie Crybaby? What's her name? I can't think of her name, but she's now a mother and this, that, and the other, but she was Tracy Lords. I mean, you know, I'm sure they do, certainly. But, I mean, what I'm trying to tell you is I just never got off on porn. Because for me, sex was never a spectator sport. Because when I did it, it was just as good, if not better, than anything that they could do. And I never asked for 220s on the nightstand. And if I said to somebody, my face leaves in 5 minutes, be on it, they were there. Now, I don't know how much more explicit and honest I can be with you.
Consensual is fine, but I really don't have a lot. I don't have a lot of sympathy for anybody who goes out there screaming for anybody else's head, who has something equally or more sketchy and perhaps nasty going on. Lived a complicated and varied life. Really? Not even an I'm sorry.
We all have.
I'm not sorry. I'm sorry. I was a porn producer and exploited porn actors. No, not even that.
Yeah, I know. You know, I used to visit people like that, and they would put in these porn tapes and shit like that, or back then it was porn tapes. And you know what I would do? I'd have a drink. I said, "Do you have a copy of Suddenly Last Summer, or Reflections of a Golden Eye?" I said, you know, this stuff goes on in my bedroom, not on the video box, and I don't need it. I don't need this type of stimulus. and never did. That's just my personal thing. I mean, what they did, that was fine. But usually after the first drink, if that's what was being put on the TV or for entertainment, I would leave. I always did. And it got to the point that they said, don't put no stuff like that on him when he's there, because he'll just flat out walk out on you. And don't ask you to put it on his VCR, because he won't do it.
Well, you are you are a man of taste and class. Hey, Jim, I'm seeing a couple other people trying to ring in. I'm going to try to work in one last phone call before the evening's out. But,
we've had
a damn fine one tonight. You've been quite on of late.
What now?
I said you've been quite on of late. So you have yourself a good evening.
Well, you too, and let's hope next week we're around to see it, because I have an ominous pit in my gut about 7 December.
Oh, I got an ominous feeling about in my gut about every night that I go to sleep and every morning that I wake up.
Bob, why do you think I drink so much?
Why do you think I wish I could?
God bless you, son. I hope you can find some means of relief.
Thank you, Jim. You take care.
I do.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's try one last call. Hey, welcome to the program. Who have I got?
Hey, Bob. This is Mike from Washington, Mike in Cascadia.
Oh, hey, Mike in Cascadia. Good to hear from you, my friend.
Hey, how's it going?
Disgusted, as the filibobster might indicate. I took your name in vain earlier, so
good.
Hope you didn't mind.
What's that?
I took your name in vain.
I
took your name in vain earlier.
I was flying back from Utah today, so I missed most of the show.
Well, I opened the program with what happened in Utah today.
Yeah, I'm anxious to hear what you said about it. I'll listen to it tomorrow when I'm commuting to work.
It's disgusting beyond disgusting. As somebody who studied archaeology, it breaks my damn heart. When these bastards start blasting over there, and they blast away thousands of years of human accomplishment and human history, it's not going to be any different than the Taliban blowing up the Buddhas in the Bamiyan Valley.
Yeah, I'd posted that exact thing on Twitter over the last couple of years, that destroying these monuments would be akin to that. So that's very true. And they say that the Bearsers area is the richest archaeological area in North America. I mean, they believe that there are still sites that they've not even discovered yet.
And the same for the paleontologists. So, yeah.
Yeah, and as far as Grand Staircase Escalante, which I've had the privilege of traveling around in there, backpacking and exploring quite a bit of it. They're right now just kind of at the tip of the iceberg at the paleontological exploration of that area. In particular, the Kaparowitz Plateau. They say it was the last area of the United States that actually got mapped. And so it's a really rugged area. And like whenever it rains in there, a four-wheel drive Jeep, you can't travel because all that red dirt just turns to like the snot.
Yeah, goo. Yeah.
So there's a few kind of sketchy roads up there, but it's just a really rugged area, and it's about 7,000 or 8,000 feet. So,
well, Mike, let me ask you a question, if I could, please.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know how closely you have followed this issue, and I'm really, really grateful for the degree that you've kept me informed and thereby let me share it with the community. Obviously, they want to. Obviously, they want to mine this area. Do you know if those mining plans are surface or underground?
So that's where I saw a map the other day, and I've not had time to sit down and really study that map. But that Kaparowitz Plateau, it looks like there's a coal seam that blankets that whole plateau. And I know there were photos of Zinke and Mike Noel up there this past spring. And Noel was showing him where the coal seam is exposed. So I think it's over a pretty vast area, so I'm not sure. And that's where I'd be curious to, you know, to see what you would say about that. Like, would they basically turn that whole plateau into an open pit mine, or how would they do that?
Well, that's why I asked the question that I asked, because and by no means am I suggesting that underground mining would be an acceptable alternative. But I know that I know that there was underground mining in Utah simply because of the Crandall Canyon disaster.
Yeah.
But if it's something if it's something that they can get at by blasting, then then that's what you can expect they'll do. But there's a so, larger problem here, and in a way, I wish I could network in with the people who are in the resistance out there, because of the degree to which people do not understand, because there has not that been much, that much focus on it, the toxic effects of mining that is dependent upon open-air blasting.
Right, right. Especially over such a vast area.
Right.
And the prevailing winds are, well, I guess downwind of that is the Navajo Nation, so they probably wouldn't care too much about that, probably.
And but the thing is, there has been so little attention paid, and I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to compete here or be dismissive. I'm not, but there's been so much attention paid to water, that there is very little understanding of what we know and have learned the hard way in Appalachia, that the vast majority of negative health impacts, both mortality and morbidity, come from the particulates from the blasting, not from impacts to the water.
Right, right. So like I said, downwind of that would be the Navajo, kind of the Four Corners area, and I guess Page, Arizona, and Kanab, Utah, and that's the home of Mike Noel. Kind of ironic, Kanab, right to the south of the Kiperowitz Plateau, that area is booming with restaurants and hotels, and the tourism there is pretty spectacular. And Zinke would not listen to any of the people that own the outdoor shops and the restaurants and the hotels, and it's the same with Escalante. They completely ignored the Escalante Chamber of Commerce, wrote a letter to Zinke. They went to D.C., and Zinke would not even meet with them. So imagine a Republican ignoring the Chamber of a Chamber of Commerce. And those are all local, organic, homegrown businesses and restaurants and outdoor shops. And
Look, so businesses can be grassroots too, Mike.
Yes, yeah. So like I said, I don't know the, I mean, I know the area just from having traveled through there quite a bit, but if it'd be okay, I could put you in touch with some people that could speak maybe on the program, and they would.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the lady I've talked to.
Yeah, please.
Krista Sadler, she's a paleontologist and geologist. She's been up there. She works for the BLM field office in Kanab, and she's been up there a lot helping with the dinosaur digs up there. So I think it'd be beneficial for them to kind of hear your voice, because you could shed light, because you're right in the middle of the disaster that's all the mining in West Virginia.
And so. You know, particulates from the blasting do not depend upon, you know, they don't depend upon, it's not coal particulates, okay? It's, for instance, most of the rock in West Virginia is sandstone, Mike. I don't know. I don't know what it is out there. But
I think it's sandstone. Yeah.
And of course, when you micro particulate that via blasting, it's just silica. And there's 100 years worth of research and data on silicosis. I mean, I feel a real urgency to try to, you know, not that, you know, not, we're not talking about white savior complex, okay? That's not what this is. I just want people to know, because, you know, they suppressed this science. They suppressed the review of this science via the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, because they don't want this science to get out. And the thing is, where it's related to blasting, it is transferable. Because this dust is poisonous.
Genetically?
No, no, it's transferable from Appalachia to Utah, Appalachia to Wisconsin, because it's all a function of the massive amounts of blasting that are involved.
Yep.
I mean, here we are in Appalachia and West Virginia, where, you know, mountaintop removal is far from over. It's less than it was when it was going absolutely hog wild under Bush. But we're still, you know, it's still 2-3 million pounds of high explosives per day.
Wow. So from you, Bob, I've learned, I mean, I hear people say coal's dead, it's a dying industry. But I've kind of put caution to people to saying that, because what I hear from you, right, where you say there's still active permits and whatnot happening in West Virginia.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if you go and actually do the skull sweat stuff and dig around through the Energy Information Agency, you will find forecasts, and they're pretty good at what they do, that say that global coal use will continue. It's not like it's dropping. It's not like it's remaining stable. Global coal use will continue to increase, and demand for it will continue to increase up into the 2030s. And that's before it plateaus.
Wow.
It's not like it's gonna fall off a cliff.
Right. Is that thermal or metallurgical or both?
It's global coal use, but the vast majority of it will be metallurgical.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry. Okay. I misspoke. The vast majority of it will be thermal. Because
thermal.
Because, I mean, for instance, the Netherlands, after Fukushima, everybody responsibly said, hey, you know, enough with the nuke plants. And that, to a certain extent, put places like Germany and the Netherlands into a bind. Germany's gouging out huge, huge, massive pits of carboniferous mud to burn, you know, lignite. And the Netherlands are the single largest net importer of mountaintop removal coal in Europe. I had a note the other day from our buddy Chris over in Germany, who told me that there are bicycle powered phone charging stations in the airport in Amsterdam, which is so cool. I call them Gilligan bicycles. You know, the coconut bicycles, just pedaling away, charging that phone. But at the same time, they're importing my blown up mountains. And I think if you told the Dutch people what was going on in that regard, they'd go, well, that's awful. We can't have that.
Well, I know up here in my town in the very northwest corner of Washington, probably one or two coal trains a day rolls through our town up to Vancouver, where it's shipped out probably to China. And I believe it's coming from Wyoming. Most of it.
From the Powder River Basin, absolutely. And make no mistake, the coal on that train is poisonous every inch of the trip from the Powder River Basin to Vancouver. So as it rolls through your town, there are people who are breathing coal poison as a result, because you can't cover up the cars, because they'll explode.
Right. Well, the other day, it's a lot cheaper for me to fly to Las Vegas and then rent a car and drive up to Salt Lake. So that's what I did. But along the highway, along I-15, there's a, out in the middle of the big basin there, it's all basin and range, with these giant flat valleys with north-south mountain range. It's beautiful country, Utah is.
Oh, God, I'd love to hike it. I would love to hike it.
Even away from the Red Desert slot canyon terrain, it's beautiful. But out in the middle of this big basin, there's these giant piles of coal, and they have trains come along there. So I was aware there, and I tried to pull off in the past to drive by and just kind of look at it. So I did the other evening. But they have the giant earth movers and loaders and dump trucks. But big, like, yellow Tonka truck, and you, this is probably all old information to you, but all the yellow dump trucks and loaders were all, like, basically black, except maybe the very top. And you, so you could just see. Right, I took a, snapped a few photos.
Yeah, imagine the inside of the worker's lungs.
Yeah, and even 200 yards away on the road, there's just this black coating, and you could just see it, just this foul. So, and I went to, we went from Utah once a couple years ago up to Crested Butte, Colorado, and we drove through a valley, and there's a giant coal mine there on the west side of the Rockies, and about 2 miles of that valley, it almost seemed like we were driving into the Depression. And everything, there's just this real somber air about the place. And there's just a giant coal mine there. And I imagine that's probably what you see and experience, like, every day, right?
It is. Yeah, ghost towns, ruined landscapes. And I want to point out one other thing. We're kind of out of time here, and I really thank you for the call, Mike. It's not like there are areas near where they're going to mine at Bears Ears and Grand Staircase. It's not like there's a whole lot of coal burning power plants around there. So we need to understand one more thing. The vast bulk of what they're going to get, they're going to export. Because what I mentioned about the growing demand for coal, well, it's going to grow in the developing world, India, China, because they sort of see it as they have no choice. China's bringing as much renewable on as they possibly can, but they can't scale it yet to make up for the lack of coal. So, you know, that adds sort of insult to injury that all this is going to be done to the majesty of pristine American wilderness in order to make a profit on the export, on the export coal market.
Yes.
And so those rail lines, those same rail lines that run to Vancouver from Powder River will probably also be extended down into Utah, to get them to maybe get them to Vancouver. I don't know. Do they ship out of the port of Los Angeles? I don't know.
Well,
or maybe down to Corpus Christi.
There's been some Utah money that's a tax, and it was meant to remediate and to provide money for communities from coal mining, some of the state royalties. And a few years ago, they found out that the Utah State Legislature, they were greasing the port of Oakland to try to get to try to develop a coal port there in Oakland. But then the city of Oakland, the people there in Oakland and the city council said, no, we won't accept coal coming into our community. So it was the Utah politicians are probably some of the most corrupt bunch around. I think most of them are real estate lawyers and real estate developers and realtors, basically, is what kind of the word is. They diverted some public state money to try to develop the coal port in Oakland. So I think this has been a long-term project for Utah. And I know here in my area in Washington, Northwest Washington, they tried to open up Cherry Point to ship coal out of there. And my community is very progressive and very active in the climate movement. So our county council shut that down. But they still run it up to Vancouver. So, and I know, I think Vancouver on the Columbia River, Vancouver, Washington, and Longview, there's a great big port on the Columbia River. I think I just saw where they aren't going to accept liquid natural gas and coal also. So there's a pretty good block of resistance on the
the Washington and Oregon resistance to coal terminals has been inspiring.
Yeah. So I guess until Trump sends the troops in to open it up, we'll keep trying to fight it all. So.
Well, look, there's really no alternative. You either fight or you acquiesce.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Mike, it's very good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. And yeah, let's get some of the conversation going with some, if we can, with some of the folks who are involved in this work.
There's a gentleman from Utah. He was the former state archaeologist from Utah, and they fired him. They decided that Utah no longer needed an archaeologist. But I'm pretty sure he might be your twin brother in a lot of ways. But I'd like to try it. Maybe I'll talk to him too and see if he might be interested. So he'd be an interesting conversation. So.
I'd love that. I think there needs to be outreach to make this science accessible and available to people, and we need to expand the voice of the resistance in this as well.
I think so.
Well, Mike, thank you very kindly. I'm glad you got to get down there and to a certain extent, you know, I also envy you because. I'd love to. It must be amazing just to hike around in there. It's just breathtaking.
Yeah, my son that graduated from high school last year, we've been down there a number of times with him. But we let him drive with some, and he's a great kid. He's like the valedictorian of his class.
Wow!
And with a couple of others, his other buddies that were also valedictorians, they drove down to Utah and they did a backpacking trip to one of the slot gulches there on their spring break. And then my oldest son, he did a NOLS, which is a National Outdoor Leadership School. He did a month-long trip down in there where they learned climbing skills and rappelling and swimming through really narrow slot canyons. So all my kids have spent quite a bit of time down there. So, and to me, it's I grew up in Montana with a family that, my parents were both great readers and they got me reading Edward Abbey when I was young and various things. And so we backpacked and fished and skied and yeah. In Montana. So I, at a very young age, learned and loved the outdoors. And I've read a lot. So I've passed that on to my kids and my wife's into it too. So for me, it's like a mortal blow because it's just the ultimate freedom in America is to go out on our federal public land. And it's in their crop. I mean, these guys, they want to take it all away from us. There's 640 million acres of federal public land out there.
And there's no getting around that. There's no getting around the fact that if they get to do what they want to do, it just won't be there anymore.
Yeah.
It will not be the same land.
I mean,
and anything they say about reclamation or anything like that is nothing but the most tissue paper thin collection of lies.
Yeah, I mean, all these places were formed throughout geologic time, and if these guys carry out their plans, it will take geologic time to put it back to something normal. I mean, it's not going to happen in our lifetimes or our kids and our grandkids and great grandkids and so on, right?
No way.
I mean, it must be heartbreak. It must be heartbreaking for you and in your area, because I mean, I've never been to West Virginia, but how you've described it on the radio, the theater of the mind. I mean, it sounds like it was a pretty magical place, and there's probably still pockets of magic there.
When my ancestors first came here, it was paradise.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
it was hard work and remote, but amazing in its own right. I mean, can you imagine the Appalachians forested and pretty much deliberately so, covered in American chestnut and oak and hickory, and massive ancient forests so that. You know, there wasn't a lot of underbrush. It was all canopy, and the hills and the rivers and the waters. Even when my great grandfather got here in 1885, out the road here was still an amazing place. And the coal the coal industry picks up a little bit later, and by about 1910, there wasn't a stand of virgin timber left anywhere in the area except for one tiny little pocket up in Monongalia County. The state had been deforested. It had been denuded. The waters were running poison, and it happens like that.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like it's similar in a way out here with the clear cutting.
Well, it is.
It
absolutely is, because, you know, what we're talking about in both instances, you know, different, somewhat slightly different species base, but you're talking about temperate rainforests.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's what we have out here.
Yeah, and that's what this is back here. Well, Mike, it has been an amazing conversation. I got to get on out of here, but I sure do appreciate your call. And let's keep working on this, okay?
Okay, I appreciate your time, Bob.
And my pleasure. Again, thank you so much. You take care.
Gives me a lot of sanity. Okay, see
thank
you, Bob.
Bye now. That's our buddy Mike in Cascadia. And I ran over because that was important, and, well, because I can, right? So I thank you all. Thanks to all of our subscribers who made possible this fundraising-free Monday. And thanks to everyone all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room, and thanks to our news ninjas, and thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.